In terms of the annual report of 2007 and 2008, Transnet has not provided progress on employment equity. I wonder if they could provide this committee with a breakdown of their staff profile in terms of race, gender, disability. Maybe the last one, are they too much? Maybe the last one.
No,
oh, they three. Okay.
I've also heard in the past education that I can count on. Okay, you'll reserve your question for the next time.
Chairperson, thank you. If you allow me, I will ask only one question now and then later the other two. Second round, what I first want to give just a small briefing, and I put it down on paper and then ask the question at the end of the day with your permission.
Very quickly,
Chairperson, nothing has been said in the introduction of Transnet's annual report about the tragic circumstances in which 36,000 members and 42,000 leaders and children of the pensioners of the Transnet sector defined pension plan. As you have been, and I want to draw your attention to the chairperson of Transnet, Mr. Pashwana, in his statement, referring to his telegraph on appreciation, and I quote, "Transnet is becoming a great company because of all its various stakeholders. On behalf of the board, I wish to express our sincere gratitude to all our employees, new and old, for their commitment, loyalty, and hard work. Refer to the old that not ignores the contribution of the existing old pensioners." Now, Chairperson, I took note of the financial statement of the fund on page 196 of the annual report and also on page 29 and 30 of your presentation, which only refers to the bonus this morning. Now, when Transnet Pension Fund was split in three in 2000, the TSDBF was dependent on only growth of the existing balance allocated to this fund and faith in proper management by the trustees of the fund. Now, CEO, you are aware of the maladministration by the Board of Trustees in the past, which placed the credibility and funded position of the fund in a pathetic position, and one can not hold the pension accountable. Chairperson, I am of the impression, in the possession of pay sheets of a couple of pensions showing that some of them received a mere 1,294 per month. The Minister replied on a written parliamentary question in September 2006 that at that stage... Some pensioners receive only 1,294 per month. And, you know, the question that I ask myself is, can one really survive on that? Since 2003, these pensioners only receive a 2% according to that, to legislation on their pension, over and above the 2007-2008 bonuses, which have been referred to. Now, if you make a calculation, if you make a calculation, they received 1.5% bonus in July 2007 and a 3% in November 2006. Then a 3% in July 2008 from the fund, a possible 2,000 from Transnet, and a 5.5% also from the fund, as we said this morning. Now, if you take a person, if you make a calculation, the pensioner will receive that 1,294 per month. If his salary increased as from 2003 until 2008, he would receive now 1,535. If you do the same calculation, taking the bonus into account, with a 100% increase in inflation, it also worked out 1,533. So both scenarios would work out almost the same, but, and this is the problem, bonuses should not be used as a means with which to ensure the salary keeps with inflation. Furthermore, and also we must recognize that it's not been said in the presentation, there were no bonuses from 2003 till 2007 when the members really needed money. We must also remember, Chairperson, that bonuses are not guaranteed and can be considered only occasionally as far as the amount of frequency of bonuses is concerned. Gracia means actually say thank you very much for the bonus. Gracia, and gracia means the people must actually say thank you very much. So you can't guarantee that. Now my question is, I've been requested by some of the members, and some members are here today, not necessarily from them, but members of the associations and organizations who represent these pensions, to put a document, a submission together. And of course, I have to start with the Transnet, because according to legislation, Chairperson.
What is your question, Mr. Sangha?
The question is whether, Chairperson, the question is whether it is possible for me to put a submission to Transnet. So, and to make certain proposals considering the improvement of the benefit fund, the so-called second defined pension fund.
Thank you.
And
they'll respond to you. You want another question?
I just want to finish the question. Before, the reason why I want to see them first is only if they have a financial implication. I cannot approach the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Public Enterprises. Because according to legislation, only the board can give permission to the trustees to amend the rules, and the rules refer to the percentage increase of the pension. So I have to start going from the pension.
Okay, Ms. Anderson.
The Chairperson, just let me start with my questions with regard to the pension fund also. You refer as well to the actuarial surpluses in the pension fund. Well, what is the status of that? Is it money that is kept in the fund? What happens to that money? Secondly, I know we maybe this discussed this 2 years ago when we dealt with the pension fund, but why was it decided or limited to a 2% annual increase at the time? And the second is that you say you're not endeavoring to ensure that your lowest earners, people who work more than 15 years for you, for Transnet, will have an annual pension of at least 8,400 a month. And works up to 700 a month. That's not really generous. I mean, it's less than what government pays for double pension. But just that with regard to the pension fund. If I can ask the other two questions also,
Okay, and you don't get another one?
Yeah.
Okay.
For now. The CEO was very, very emphatic the point that nothing was sold that shouldn't have been sold and so on. And I had sent the question before she started, but I assumed then that every one of your board members are 100% happy with the transaction that was the Chairperson, I'm sure you were confirmed. I just previously mentioned in our last debate, Chairperson, the need for Parliament to investigate the setting up of an overarching committee which has the necessary clearance, where when necessary they can interact with state-owned enterprise or any other enterprise when it comes to what is regarded as sensitive information. Because right now in the position is, if you get told this is commercially sensitive, so maybe that's something that our committee should pursue again. The last question is, when you talk about you sold the shares, not the land, I'm not talking about the scheme of the land. When I go into the waterfront here, I'm in the waterfront, the near waterfront. Now I understand that has been sold, the land. When you say we sold the shares, not the land, now I'm not sure. Who owns that land?
Half hours of presentation. We are only three MPs, so the purpose of this committee in an hour, such a short time. And really, I just want to complain.
You're very disingenuous. You're the one that has the most time. So
you blocked me after the conference.
I didn't block you. I asked you to ask questions, and you went and you proceeded to do a briefing. And what I'm saying to you is you'll get another opportunity. But this round is over, and I'm going to ask them to respond. And hopefully, they, in the process of responding, they will have taken care of some of your next questions. And if they haven't, you'll get another opportunity. And you know this process quite well. I don't know why you're frustrated.
Please go ahead. Who's going to respond?
Who?
I felt part, and then I'll also ask some of my colleagues are asking as well to talk about the pension fund, pension fund issues, and I guess the chairman will say something about whether the board was happy or not with the transaction. Let me start with the issue around the process that we have followed in relation to the Sunday Times. We have actually engaged lawyers to look at the Sunday Times article and to advise us, and we will be taking the matter under advisement once we have the input from the lawyers. What we are asking Sunday Times for is a retraction and an apology. Because we really believe in responsible journalism, and I think that's what's important. For us, the reputation, Transnet's reputation is above all else the most important thing here, and we think that by implication, so it's the reputation of our country, and the arts is about them both. So I think that's very important for us. On the split, and maybe just the time to explain the shared land story. In 2001, as Chris has already explained, there was a DNA property company that had set up the property act. In other words, the actual land, the property, the title deed, the rental income, the leases, etc., are housed in that property company, and above that said the DNA Waterfront Holding Company, and Transnet got 26% shareholding in that holding company, and then the pension fund got 74% in that. But below that is the property company where the title deeds are housed. Right? And we had the shares in the holding company. So the shares in the holding company were sold. But by selling, I suppose, those shares, underneath that was the property and the title deed. So you have sold the shares in that and underneath that the land and the title deed and the property to their shelf. So they own that. But that you run. If that drives into the port, what is on the right-hand side, the container terminal, the multi-purpose terminal, the Duncan lock, all of that belongs to Transnet as part of the port. And what is on the left-hand side, the fancy parking blocks, that none of them can afford, the fancy shops, the hotels, etc., is now part of Lecture. Right? We own 26%, the pension fund owns 74%, and that work was sold in total for approximately 7 billion rand, of which we got 26%, which is 700 billion of that, which is what tax is funded. So really, where's the attention? Well, that's how the money was split between us. Let me deal with the MTN shares and the tax recently. It's an ongoing case. All our legal advice is that we have a very strong case. In fact, so strong that we have not made any provisions for it in our financial statements. The case proceeds and it's due to come before the court next year in September. And so, we are confident of our opposition on that matter, and we have not made any decisions on that. I think we have been seen as management team and as a board with a plan of all the pensions. If we hadn't been seen with it, we wouldn't have paid as much time and put as much effort into ensuring that we brought the town's pension fund as quickly and with as much intense diligence and attention as we have. In which they are financially in a sound position. In a position where they can actually afford to pay pensioners more than the 2% that is set out in statute. At the moment, the additional payments are paid on the basis of bonuses, because what the statute allows for is a 2% increase. That's what's in the second of the second time benefit fund and our pension fund. I think one of the reasons why we have declared of our own account the extra payment is because we've been particularly concerned with the part of the pensioners who earn a very low monthly pension. You mentioned, Mr. Funday, the pensioners are earning 1,294 rand per month, and that is low. But I can tell you that we have pensioners who earn even less than that, which is why we have taken money to top up those pensions to exceed the level of the state. And at the time we did that, we considered the best mechanism for doing it so that the beneficiaries of that top-up not automatically lose the state old age pension, which they would lose because of the means test. And so we did not want them to lose the state old age pension because we had increased the transfer pension, and so we declared it in the form of a bonus. And that's what we did. So we are busy with the issue of the transfer pension. But we did also need to make sure that we did bring these funds to a position where they were financially stable. Because if they were not financially stable, there was absolutely no way in which Transnet or its pension funds could assure pensioners in the future
you retire, even with long term, you have no pension to make. Okay. 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 It's not widows of serving members who had no pension fund whatsoever because it didn't pass from the principal member to the widow, which is, you know, part of the part-time pension. We have managed to incorporate those into the pension funds, and they have now security pension. Then we have done a lot of work with the pensioners, and these are identified that over 40% want to construct a process where they would put the needs test that's required to do that, so then the other ones are pointless in making a contribution and get their money. So we have applied with bonus and ex gratia process. In the meantime, we are putting a lot of work strategically into seeing what we can do to make money change.
I'm working.
The question on the actuarial surplus and what happens to it. The actuarial surplus is the actuarial calculation of how much the valuation of the assets exceeds the future obligation of the fund. And there's a significant actuarial surplus in the fund. And that's all in the fund. Strategy about how to apply that going forward to the French government or in a way that can be projectable.
Yes, they
think as Chris has said and Maria has said, that there were very strict governance structures which surrounded these transactions. And so the things we're debating for instance were what happens if one of the bidding companies and companies which I express as second share. So we debated all these things and ended up with a governance situation which said such a company, for instance, would never qualify because it just wouldn't make sense. So we dealt with all those issues, and at every turn, the executive would come back and say, this is where we are. And we would review that, assess it, give it a tick, and then they would go on again. And I think one of the strongest things in this whole process is that it wasn't run in-house. And that was a very, very deliberate strategy. Because if you run things in-house, like the people we have now, people would be saying, how do we know the whereas at the moment the thing was done at arm's length from us, you can go to those reputable firms and say, how have you done it? And they will explain it, but it's all outside company itself. And for that reason, the board was very comfortable that when the world did. And as Maria explained, one of the things we should worry about is to balance sort of economic empowerment. And when you're dealing with that 74% retention of money, you need to be careful, as this debate will indicate, that you don't go and sustain retention on what is their right. But the body is very active.
That was, you know, I didn't speak out of my mouth. That was all in the 2 pages. I referred to all those Jack Wheelers as well, and all the people in the 40% who actually received such and such statements. I'm aware of all of that. And I just wanted to put that on the table, but thank you very much. In the reply, it all came to the fall, which I would like to, which I was on the way to put, and then ask the question in that background.
What I'm saying is that in your submission, make sure that
you're
doing
those. It is in my submission, and given the
2 pages.
Thank you very much. Just a question here. One on the triple B is that during the year your triple B spending rose by 31%, 37% the previous year. Total procurement spending now includes operational and technical expenditure. In line with the triple B, also, also your long term aim in terms of the
Thank you, Chair. Chair, thank you for the opportunity. I'm sorry I'm gate crashing here, but the thing is, if I raise this issue at Scopa, it will be a year later and Transnet will have lost a lot more. But I want to raise an issue that I'm very concerned about, and that is a couple of years ago, we at Scopa asked for investigation by the Auditor General into the scrap metal contract. And non-ferrous metal contract at Transnet, and it took about 2 years to get access for the Auditor General to Transnet cook, because there were legal opinions this way and that way. But eventually, when it was done and the investigation was completed, it exposed a loss to Transnet, which they lost, because they were getting too little money for the scrap metal. Now,
the reason why I'm raising this issue is that Transnet is issuing tenders every day, whether it's selling carriages or fixing up stations, and it's a public program. But I was informed a couple of weeks ago that the big contract for selling scrap metal of Transnet was not a public process, and apparently it's only a few companies were asked and shortlisted to put in bid. And when I found the official there in Johannesburg, he said to me, look, that's tough luck, that's the way it's done. And so I'm raising this issue here to find out if that is the case, and the price that Transnet is getting for the scrap metal is because people are now stealing fencing poles. The scrap metal price is so high. And whether the official here of the Transnet are aware of the situation, and why didn't they go for a public process when they sell carriages or whatever, it's public process. But this contract is one of the biggest scrap contracts in South Africa. And what is the reason for not going on a public process? Thank you, Chair.
Whether it's into our locomotive contracts or into any of our we do try and build in a meaningful local component aspect of the contract. But it is, I don't know, it is quite impossible for me just to break down and being absolutely frank about it. I'm going to ask, Chris is going to talk about the balance sheet issues, and I'll speak, and I'll ask Pradeep to talk about the skills and skills problems, and how we're going about it in that way. And I'll also then ask Pia to talk about the railway facilities for the agricultural sector and about the scrap metal contract, because I don't really know, what are the issues that you're raising are around off the top of my head, but I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of them. Let me deal, Chair, you asked the question on the coal side, and the fact that I did say that some of the issues that impacted on the coal volumes are our own responsibility. And yes, they are. They have revolved around a number of areas. They've revolved around reliability and availability of the fleet. As you know, we have a fleet that is an old fleet in terms of the locomotive fleet. And as we have pushed that fleet of locomotives, that we really experienced reliability. We've also, from time to time, experienced problems in the infrastructure, and we had some derailments on the coal line. And once you have a derailment, that doesn't mean you do shut down the line, and that does impact on volume. We were also impacted in the course of last year. By some load shedding, although I have to add that wasn't the main cause of the volume issue. But all of these issues taken together impacted on our side of the equation and contributed to the atmosphere target. And then on my side, there were issues around the availability of coal as well. So there were issues on both sides. But it's important that we take responsibility for our part of the equation in terms of having the reliability and availability from a sequence of these both from the locomotive and the wagon side of the position. Maybe Chris, we can talk, start with you since you've both in the in relation to the damage.
The addition was having to go from approximately 77 dollars to $99.99. I looked at some major change. The contract, 2.4 billion was a reduction on assets that were earned. So the big increase was spent on the capital expenditure. Minus the depreciation of the port, and then the revaluation of about 13% of the port facility. If you take the capital of about 15% minus the depreciation of the port, which is about 12%, plus 13% revaluation at the current value. Essentially, there's two big changes. One was the capital expenditure, Hedonic Church was every 5 years to have a Hedonic renovation. And that's about 30 years. Those two were
there. Yeah, I thought I understood it before you started speaking.
I'm going to
Yes, can I just say, I'm very sure. I'm aware of the 18 months or whatever which is coming to an end now, but the current process of renewing that is not a public process. Because people have already been asked to give offers and have been approached. And that process is ongoing, in fact, it's very far finalized.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you, yes, to respond on that.
In terms of the issues related to how we are trying to assist the agricultural sector, we are involved and engaged with the different farming communities in terms of the South African Grain Association, the South African Silo Association, and the Millers Association. In terms of trying to come up with an integrated strategy on how we should deal with their issues ostensibly because their industry is very different and unique. It's the seasonality of the crop, which means that the asset utilization is not throughout the year, and they never really know where they're going to import products, so they're going to move it from around the country. Sometimes they never even know which part of the country products are going to be coming from. So there's a number of issues that we're engaged with them in. What we know, though, is that the cost to serve them and from a regulatory perspective is much lower than what they pay on road, but obviously there's a lot of issues there, which is going to be we're engaging with them in terms of trying to find a long-term solution so there is an engagement, but we have not finalized.
The
agreement that the cash generated from profit as a percentage of total debt. And in terms of the standing of strong balance sheet, it generally shouldn't go below 30% on a prolonged period. You can see that line. Around 30% for the 2 years of the projection of cash flow. those projections show, as has the doctor, that the auditory measures for sound transmission will be met in the next 5 years, as long as we perform in closely, reasonably closely to our projections.
Regulation does is to impact directly on the cash flow we can generate borrow in. Just being able to borrow this kind of money in itself becomes an issue. So the reason why we have taken the step of putting down all of the metrics that the rating agencies use is so that we can keep monitoring whether or not we are still within that ballpark of what they need.